welcome to Speaking with Joy, a podcast about books, beauty, and music. So make yourself a cup of tea, sit down, and let's begin. Hello, friends, and welcome back to Speaking with Joy. This week, I have been thinking homeward thoughts, and that is because this week is Thanksgiving. It's a funny thing to experience this holiday overseas, because as we sometimes forget, Thanksgiving is an essentially American holiday. It's a time that you most associate with home, with food, with family. So to experience it overseas is to really feel that distance and to really long for closeness for home and to sometimes kind of miss home. But it's also a special time because I've often bonded most closely with Americans over here during Thanksgiving because we all bond together. And honestly, I end up celebrating it more over here than I do in the States because everyone has a Thanksgiving. And it's kind of this specialness in that we get to create a sense of home and togetherness even as we all long for home and togetherness. So I have been thinking about you all, and I am so excited to share this week's episode with you that's all about feasting and fasting and what that teaches us about God. I thought this would be a good episode to do during this week since it is Thanksgiving. And originally, I had recorded this episode with my friend David Bennett as a secret podcast for my Patreon supporters. But it was so good, and we had so much fun doing it, and it was so appropriate for Thanksgiving that I thought I would share it with all of you instead. So this will be a special episode, a holiday episode, thinking about feasting and fasting and how we experience God's love and God's generosity in food. Special for Thanksgiving. I hope that it will be a fun thing. Maybe you can listen to it while you cook and while you prepare to feast with your family. Now, a couple of other little announcements that have to do with feasting is that I've also created a playlist on Spotify, which I'll post on the blog and also on Patreon and my Facebook page, that is songs for home. So I went through and picked a lot of songs that I could think of that talked about home, about family, about eating. And I put them all in a playlist. And these are all kind of singer-songwritery songs. They're songs I wanted you to listen to and enjoy while you're cooking. They're not classical music. They're just folky songs and pop songs, things that just make me think of home. So I hope that you will enjoy that. And I'll put that in the blog. But I also just wanted to take this moment, as I'm coming up on Thanksgiving, to tell you all how deeply thankful I am for every single listener. I had this dream to do this podcast, it just came to me one day, 2 summers ago, but I never could have dreamed of how quickly I would gain a small audience of people who cared about these ideas as much as I did. And every time I get a letter from one of you, or you say that the podcast encourages you, it makes me just want to keep going. And I just feel so thankful to have many friends out there who value goodness and truth and beauty, and that you all take time to listen and to think about these things really means so much to me. And it just makes me really thankful. And I also wanted to say a particular thank you to all of my Patreon supporters. All of you, you really don't know, this really has kind of kept me afloat during this year. It's made me able to do the podcast and also to go after this PhD with everything in me. And you have supported my life, supported these podcasts, and I can't tell you thank you enough. I hope that you enjoy the small things that I provide for you, the extra podcasts and the playlists and the articles and things. But most of all, I just want you to know, I couldn't do it without you. You all truly are blessing my life, keeping me afloat, and I couldn't be more thankful for all of you. So I will stop blah, blah, blahing and let you hear this episode that I recorded with my dear friend David. I wish you all beautiful Thanksgivings. I encourage you to think about the gifts in your life and the ways that God has been with you. And for me, that thankfulness often boils down to the people that God has put in my life. So I wish you a beautiful Thanksgiving, and perhaps most of all, I wish you wonderful feasting, and I hope that you remember that feasting is a deeply spiritual thing. Hello, friends, and welcome to the special Patreon series for Speaking with Joy. Thank you to all of my patrons. And I am so excited for this podcast. I'm doing it with my grand friend, David Bennett. Say hello, David.
Hello, everyone. Such a pleasure to be here with you, Joy.
Absolutely. It is a pleasure. Now, David and I met last year in St. Andrews. You were doing a master's in what?
In analytic and exegetical theology, which is a bit of a mouthful, but basically it means bringing philosophy, theology, and the Bible together in one.
Which is how it should be.
Yes.
But David and I met last year, I think like during one of the big university things, and we got to be really good friends. Mm. And I would say that we are good friends bonded around a love of three things.
Mm-hmm.
One is a love of Jesus.
Absolutely.
Yes, profoundly. One is a love of arts and experiences. Mm. We're both kind of aesthetes.
Aesthetes, that's the word.
Yeah. Yes, Christian hedonists in the best way. We love, we'd sit and talk about movies and...
The Dolce Vita.
Yes, exactly, the sweet life. And then also, and probably, I don't know, it's not most important because it's not more important than Jesus, but it's pretty important.
Yes.
A love of food.
Yes. Now that is
important.
That's the height of things there in terms of the Dolce Vita, I have to say, food. Yeah.
Yes. And so like when I think back on last year, now, and it's fun because David and I actually both now live in Oxford.
We do.
Which is so wonderful. But when I think back last year on fond memories, we both had pretty intense years, wouldn't you say?
Really intense.
But I have so many memories of like little moments of rest and sweetness based around waffles.
Waffles, yes.
Spanakopita.
Spanakopita.
David is Greek by origin.
I am a quarter Greek, so yes. Just enough to be Greek, yeah.
Just enough Greek to make great spanakopita. And so what are some of our other things we eat?
We used to have these little konbini bowls, Japanese food.
Mm-hmm.
We would always end up having breakfast at the small little kitchen.
Yes.
Pancakes.
Pancakes, coffees.
Yeah.
Basically, we just really enjoy having food together.
We did.
And those are these kinds of moments of sanity. Oh, also the street noodles, the Thai.
Yep. Yeah.
But we had all these little moments of... just like rest and peace and life-giving conversations in the midst of very hectic years for both of us over food.
Absolutely.
So today, and sorry, if you ever want to butt in, feel free.
Please.
Not butt in, you'd be contributing.
Joy is taking this forward, so.
So I was thinking about what kind of podcast I wanted to do around this time. We're getting to November, so for most of my... American listeners, that is close to Thanksgiving. And
the fall, right?
You say
fall.
Yes.
I say autumn.
Yes. And I like autumn better.
Yeah, it is better.
Because you have the words like autumnal.
No,
and
yeah, it's more poetic.
Fall reminds me of like the depravity of man. Which is not as fun.
Exactly.
But for, all of these things remind us of coziness and food. And David and I both think that there is a lot of spiritual significance to food.
I also think there's something about our experience together of being in St. Andrews in a colder climate.
Yeah.
Just kind of rugged up, mm-hmm. cooking meals for each other, where we were able to experience the presence of God in rich ways in our friendship. And I think there's, food is almost like a mediator. It's something that you take and in it you can experience such profound intimacy.
Yeah.
That is safe and beautiful and glorifying to God. And I just think, both in we do that well.
I know, you really do.
Sorry, we do it well.
So all that to say, today we will be talking about feasting and fasting. We'll be talking about Babette's Feast. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me begin by saying, David, why don't you tell us a little about yourself, a bit of your story, what you're doing now.
Absolutely.
Your bio, your paragraph
bio.
Well,
I've always been an aesthete, and I've always loved the finer things in life.
Mm-hmm.
And I hello from Sydney, Australia, originally, where I grew up.
I'm still hoping that someday you'll...
I'll get my accent back.
No! He has like a kind of Britishized Australian accent. No, I'm still hoping that someday I can visit you in Sydney, and you can take me to all the good food places.
Oh, it's... Chinatown is heaven. Okay, so I very much, was an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
I was spiritually experimental all through my younger years. Was a Buddhist, was into New Age religion. And I came out as gay when I was 14. So for me, Christianity was out of bounds. And, I was disqualified from being part of God's kingdom. That's what I thought, having grown up in a Christian kind of school, but in an agnostic household.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was 19, I radically encountered the love of Jesus in a pub, another place where there's food.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was just, yeah, the love of God really transformed my whole life from being a kind of atheist, gay activist-y type to yeah, having my whole life revolutionized by God. So
yeah,
it's been amazing. And I have a book coming out, which will tell that story, called A War of Loves, The Unexpected Journey of a Gay Activist Discovering Jesus.
Yes. So that is, I think by the time I publish this, it will have just come out.
Yeah, you can look it up on awaroflovs.com.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, sorry.
No, no.
Yes, it will be coming out. It will be out.
It'll be out by the time we publish this. Yes. So look that up, definitely. And David, now tell us, so we've got that bit of your story. The last few years, you have been invested in a great deal of deep theological study. So tell us a bit about that.
Yes. So I have been training as a theologian. At Oxford originally, studied at the Oxford Center for Christian Apologetics, and then I did a kind of bridging into master's level theology here in at the University of Oxford at Regent's Park College, and there I looked at contemporary Anglican theology, looking at the problem of human desire and how it relates to the doctrine of God. So I'm very much interested in the ideas of like fullness and lack of suffering and glory, of denial and resurrection, you know, self-denial and resurrection, and how those things play out. I think in my own journey on all sorts of levels, I think part of being human is learning how to deny one desire
for a greater good. And I think that'll come in when we start talking about fasting and feasting.
It will.
So then, so you did a PG dip here, which is basically like a pre-master's kind of thing.
Pre-master's, then I did a master's in St. Andrews.
And then now you're doing?
Looking at the theology of Sarah Coakley. And now I'm doing a DPhil. And it's been really amazing. Like, I became good friends or acquaintances with N.T. Wright, who is my professor. And, you know, he's really supportive of my vision of things, and so that's been all fantastic.
So all this to say, keep your I'm always funny because I always like pat people and hug them while I'm like, oh, they're so good, and I'm like, nobody can see that I'm like I'm patting your back like, yes, I'm so excited for you. But keep your eye out for David. He will be a star on the rise, and I just am so excited to see what the Lord will do with his life. So now that we have gotten that, you know, a little bit more about my dear friend, let's talk a bit about feasting and fasting. And I think we'll start by, let's start by kind of talking about Babette's Feast, because to me, that is, it is the film to me on the power of feasting and kind of the tensions between indulgence of desire, but then the appreciation and joyness. A lot of what you're talking about fullness and
lack
and you know, what we do, why fasting matters, but also why feasting matters, and how in the end I think God calls us to fullness, and in so much as he calls us to fasting, it's only so that we can experience that fullness more. But I wanted to start with a little story, because you all know that I did, most of you do, that I did my master's at the Institute for Theology, Imagination, and the Arts. And in one of my courses, it was a really important part of the course that we all had to give presentations, and on various artworks, we all had to pick one and discuss kind of the theological import of it. And there was this one guy in my class who, he was a little bit older. He was, I think, in his 40s. He had done lots of other things. And he did this course, not because he wanted to be an academic theologian, although you had to be, like, you know, pretty good to get into it, because he really wanted to enrich himself. And he had also been, like, a cook and all these different things. So he chose Babette's Feast. And, you know, the rest of us did presentations where we, like, you know, did our little PowerPoints and talked through and gave people handouts. But I remember coming into class that day, and he had transformed the classroom. He had set a tablecloth out. He had made all of these, like, little finger sampling versions of the things in Babette's feast, so which we'll talk about in a second.
Amazing.
And he'd given us all, he got us, you know, he couldn't bring alcohol into the classroom, but he gave us all sparkling Marinelli, Smartinelli's, whatever it is, sparkling apple juice. And then we got to watch, we'd watched the film together and we talked through it. And I remember just thinking, it would have been wrong to talk about this film without doing what it is portraying. You
absolutely
know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm just going to start by kind of talking through the story of the film, and then we can begin to kind of unpick some of the things that are important about it. So I'm totally spoiler alerting, so you should go watch this. So if you want to, what you should do is just pause the podcast right here, go watch Babette's Feast,
do
and
it.
Then come back.
Yes.
But so in Babette's Feast, it's about these, centers around these two women who are the daughter of this Puritan preacher, right?
Yeah, he's a follower of Melanchthon, who was
a former,
just before Calvin, yeah.
And they kind of live by this very strict rule of holiness, and and his wife has died, so he has his two daughters, and it kind of follows their young years, and they both have these kind of moments of opportunities that they can fall in love that they kind of turn away from because they feel like that wouldn't really be following the Lord, you know, to get married, like, you know, they should live single lives that are very harsh and difficult. And like one of them is, she falls in love with this young officer, and he is passionately in love with her, but she kind of gets afraid by it, so she doesn't get married to him. And the other one has this beautiful opera voice that, you know, when you listen to it, I can't remember what he says, but this guy somehow finds her, I think he gets shipwrecked in the town or something. And he says, "Your voice brings glory to God."
Mm.
And he begins to train her, and then she gets scared. And she says, no, I shouldn't be an opera singer. I should just follow my father. And so when the story begins, these two women have gotten kind of old, and they live this very kind of strict life. They only eat this very boring kind of soup that's made of like boiled bread, which sounds disgusting. But I've asked Thomas, my brother-in-law, who's Danish, and he said that it's
bread
actually
soup, though.
Yeah, it's like rye.
Really?
And it doesn't that sound terrible?
Oh. So well, there is a Tuscan soup where you put sourdough bread in it.
Like we had with Marie
the
other day.
Yeah, so I think,
what is that?
You know, I don't know. It's just like, so you get your really, you know, rich and ripe tomatoes, and you mix them together with sourdough bread, and it creates this, I mean, I don't know, she can cook it.
Our friend Marie, who is just like such a beautiful soul, had us over for lunch the other day and gave us this soup, and it was amazing. But in the movie, they make it look super unappetizing.
They
it's like pumpernickel or rye bread, and then it's boiled and then mashed, which just sounds makes me gag just thinking about it. But they live these very disciplined lives. But out of nowhere, this French chef appears. It's around the time of the French Revolution, and she has a letter from the person who taught one of the girls how to sing opera. And it says, "Would you please consider like helping my friend? Her husband and her son have died in the French Revolution, and she can't live here." So they employ her, and they're kind of gracious to her, and little by little, she makes their lives lovelier, just in simple ways. But every year, she buys a lottery ticket. And then one year, she wins the lottery. And so she says, "I'm going to go back to France. You know, things have calmed down. But before I leave, let me give you this feast." And so I'm sorry, I'm just totally talking.
Doesn't she import wine?
Oh my gosh, she imports
from
wine.
France.
She imports a turtle.
Yes.
Right? She makes this like unlike you've ever seen feast that she hosts for these simple people. And it turns out that she was the head chef of one of the greatest kitchens in France. And they hadn't known all these years. And she gives this wonderful feast. And to the sisters and all of their kind of fussy
puritanical,
yes,
pious,
yes, people, and they agree that they're not going to talk about it because they feel like it's not, you know, it's not,
it's
pious.
Overindulgent.
It's overindulgent.
Yeah.
But somehow the officer, who this is like 40 years later, and he's very disillusioned with life, and he's been very indulgent his whole life, is the only one who's sitting there going, "Oh my gosh, this is like, you could not get better wine, better food, better than anywhere in the world." And slowly but surely, it's almost like the magic of this feast works upon everyone, and the people who are fighting begin to be kinder to each other. And by the end, it's like this picture of the generosity, and they find out that she has spent all of her money from the lottery to make them this feast. So there's so much there. But where should we start? What should we pick out?
Well, I think because we said our first love is Jesus.
Yes.
One of the things that's always I've loved about this film and then thinking about Jesus's life is in a way Babette represents a very profound aspect of who Jesus is, I think. Yes. And there's both the love of life, the sitting and eating with the people that you're not supposed to, but also being with those who are like religious.
Yes.
And then there's also, you know, during his life in the Gospel of Matthew, they say to him, why do none of your disciples like fast? Why are they eating so much all the time?
Well, and Jesus is called a glutton and a drunkard.
That's right.
Like Jesus.
In the Gospel of Matthew. Like Jesus. So.
And he doesn't like say, no, I'm not. You know what I mean? He owns it.
So there's something of an echo here in Babette's Feast as a film, and I think the life of Jesus. Yeah, so there is this parallelism between Babette and Jesus, and this idea of actually God himself coming down in human flesh. And sure, Jesus' life was marked by self-denial, but it was first and foremost marked by celebration, abundance. A wedding banquet.
Yes.
Wine being turned, water being turned into wine.
Well, let's just think about this. Okay, Jesus' ministry starts with a wedding.
Exactly.
Where he gives them the best wine. And I love that story. In the Old Testament, the picture of God's redemption is the feast for all the nations.
And the vats overflowing with wine.
Yes, the vats overflowing with wine. Jesus tells the parable about, this is actually, I think, what it reminds me of. When he talks about the king who prepares a feast. And he invites the neighboring kingdoms, and they're like, oh, I'm busy. And he's like, well, then I will invite whoever will come. And to me, that's a little bit of a picture of this, because it's like the people who are kind of, you know, in the movie are kind of uptight, and they feel like, well, if we're really going to be holy, we have to be, you know, denying ourselves.
We need to look morally good.
Yeah, we need to look.
We need to strive towards
There's a reason they call it puritanical.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this was...
It's the negative aspect of Puritans.
Yes.
Because there was a good side.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's like Lewis has this quote where he says, over the last 300 years, we've replaced positive virtues for negative things. Mm. So rather than talking about charity, we talk about unselfishness.
Absolutely.
Rather than talking about, you know, we kind of replace these negative things. So... But they're, to me, kind of like, in the parable, they're like the people in the kingdom who say, oh, we can't come to the feast. Mm. And I love in the feasting scenes, there's like two people who really like recognize the feast that she's giving them.
Absolutely.
And one of them is the guy who's...
Indulgent officer, right?
The indulgent officer, yeah. Mm-hmm. He has a taste. He knows what's happening. And then the little boy in the kitchen who's helping her. And every time he tastes something, his eyes get wide and he's like, oh my gosh. Mm. And to me, it's like a picture of God in Christ specifically, but in general, he's given us this beautiful, abundant world.
Yeah.
Jesus says, I came that you might have life and have it abundantly. And we're sitting here at the Puritans at the table being like, oh, trying to act restrained. That's a bit too much.
Yeah.
Like, that's a little bit, you know. And I don't know. So to me, it was a picture of, do I ever, out of my own desire to appear righteous, ignore the abundant gifts of God in the world?
So good, yeah.
And don't see those as like signs of his love towards me.
Well, it's interesting you're saying that, because I had an encounter with Jesus once where I think I was very much like that Puritan in my own life. Mm. And I was like, God, you know, it's a bit much. Like, I need to deny myself.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Pick up my cross and follow you. But what I didn't realize is he said to me, unless you taste heaven, you can't bring heaven to earth.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, my time spent with N.T. Wright has been really breaking that idea in Christian thinking that heaven is opposed to earth.
Yes.
C.S. Lewis says, aim for heaven and you get earth thrown in.
Yes.
But if you aim for earth, then you won't get anything.
Yes.
So I think there's that sense in which we don't want to be... What I love about Babette's Feast is it breaks open this dualism we sometimes fall into.
Yes.
Whatever our belief system is, that, you know, whether it's Buddhism or Christianity, But you were talking about that earlier, Joy.
Yeah. Well, and I was going to say, because I think there's another element to this, which is that God does call us to self-denial, right?
Yeah.
We both totally think that in our lives. Mm-hmm. And God calls us to sometimes deny desires that we have, to sometimes kind of hem ourselves in. But I think it's always for the purpose
of a greater
fullness.
Absolutely.
That we, it's that wonderful quote again by Lewis where he says, we're far too easily pleased. We're like a little child playing in a mud puddle who doesn't know what it means to be offered a holiday on the beach. So I think we are sometimes called, we are all called in various ways to deny ourselves things. But we're called to deny it so that when we truly experience the feast, we can love it. And to me, oddly, the soldier in the story is kind of a picture of that, because he has indulged too much in life. He has found it unsatisfying, so he kind of begins to live this very strict life. But then when he comes to this feast and he experiences it, and he sees this good woman who that he didn't get to marry, he recognizes it for the fullness that is actually there, partially because he has fasted, because he's experienced lack.
That's right.
And so I think it's all a matter of understanding why we feast. And I was talking to David about this earlier, because one of my friends last year in St. Andrews, we had this, it was almost funny, it was like this sprawling day-long conversation where, like, I ran into him at breakfast, and then I went and worked, and then we had lunch, and it was like this all-day conversation. And he would ascribe to something more like Buddhism. And he said, you know, the goal is really, and this is like the primary goal of Buddhism, is to be, what do they call it? Detached.
Detached.
Detachment.
Yeah. It's detachment from desire, yeah.
Yeah, detachment from desire. So
including loving your neighbor in and of themselves. So you have to kind of love them, not as an end, but as a means.
Yes. It's very weird. So yeah, it's like it's like the idea that the reason we're unhappy is because we have attachments, and that then, you know, that those cause our unhappiness, because either they're taken away or they don't give enough.
Whereas if we're freed from those and we don't,
then we can kind of give out of this indifference. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of good in that. I see actually a lot of Christianity. Yeah, I see a lot of sharing in that. But what I said to him was, for me, when Jesus says, take up your cross and follow me, it's not so you can just die to yourself and be detached. It's so that you can be detached from the things that won't truly satisfy you.
And so that you can experience the bounty of the new creation and the resurrection. Yes.
And that's not, and I think this is the thing we have trouble with. That's not like some hypothetical, like, spiritual, non-bodily thing. It's redeemed life in Christ.
Redeemed life, exactly.
Yeah, and so I think that's a really helpful thing to remember, is that it's not that we're not called to self-denial, but it's that we're called to it in the context of God is inviting us to a feast. So much of the language that Jesus uses is about feasting. It's about being satisfied. So much as we are called to him in our desires, it's so that we can truly experience fullness.
Well, Joy, I think for me, this is bringing up an even deeper thing, because I think feasting is never just about feasting in itself.
No.
You know, in scripture, feasting, I believe it's literal in a sense, but it's a metaphor actually for receiving God's love.
Yes.
The bounty of his love.
And that becomes, pardon me being my little, what was it that Tobias called me, a crypto-Catholic, but...
We're all, if you're a good Protestant, you're a bit of a crypto-Catholic. Come on.
Yeah. So, but it's, I mean, that's literally portrayed, receiving God's love in Jesus saying, this is my body broken for you. That we have this love feast. You know, the early Christians had the love
feast.
The agape feast, because that was this feasting became literally receiving the body of Christ into you that redeems you.
Well, I think that's right. And I think, you know, our problem, the effects of sin and death on our lives have meant that we actually really struggle to receive love.
Yes.
And I think the human estate for the last since we've existed has been a kind of resistance towards love and towards the pleasures of that love.
Yes.
And I think we can often slip into that even in atheism or in theism.
Yes.
We can go, well, I'm not loved by God. God doesn't exist. Or we can say God exists, but I can't like, I'm going to secretly reject that love, yes. actually.
Because God actually wants me to perform. He actually wants.
And so the impossible thing in Christianity that becomes possible with God mm-hmm. is to receive God's love.
Yeah.
And that really is the essence of the gospel. And so what we're yes. talking about in the feasting,
yeah.
fasting reality
is really
is the preparation,
yes,
and the reception,
yes,
of God's love. Because that fasting is a kind of celebratory expectation
of what's
for
coming.
Fullness, excitement. Yes. It's not I must fast now yes. so that I am a holy person.
We fast so that we can feast.
Exactly.
There's this quote by Chesterton. I'm so bad. I give so many paraphrases where he says the church told people to fast. First, because it could tell them also to feast.
And he also says, if we're going to apply this to our sexual or romantic yeah. desires, he says, chastity is not something that boring or dour. It's something flaming, like yes. a Joan of Arc. And I think that's great. Flaming with desire.
Yes, and I always love it because he's like, in Orthodoxy, he's like, people complain that they can't have any woman they want, but it's wild that you can have one woman that's your wife. Like, why do we even think... Anyway, Chesterton's great.
We love that.
No, but I think you're so right. It is this... It's this beautiful invitation to us to experience true fullness. Mm. To experience God's total gift of himself to us. And we experience that in Jesus. But we already experience it too in the fullness of creation that God has given us.
Absolutely.
Everything from God is this generous outpouring of love. You know, the world, I always think of the cosmos itself as proceeding from the love within the Trinity.
Well, it's interesting because I think the environmental crises that yeah. we're facing right now in the world mm-hmm. are a sign of both how broken, but how important our relationship is to God's creation.
Yes.
In receiving his love.
Yeah.
That actually the way we treat the creation reflects mm-hmm. the way in which we love God and how he yes. loves us. And so if that's broken,
yeah.
we'll be exploiting the creation.
Yes.
But if that's healed,
yeah, then we
will be stewarding it.
We steward it, and partially because it's this, it's not just this picture, it is a reality of the outpouring love that God has given us. And so we wouldn't defame it, we wouldn't treat it poorly, because that would be to desecrate a gift that God has given us.
And I think one of the other things within that mm-hmm. as well is what I love about Babette is she's mm-hmm. not thinking about the lottery as I need to save this, I need to worry about the yes. future, I need to make sure I've got this and this and that in place, yeah. which is personally a fear that I often oh, yeah. deal with, because in my childhood my parents were always worrying about their mortgage yeah. repayments or, you know, how they'd get through the next month. And
well, when we were just talking about being a student, you have to constantly yeah. every single day give that desire to hold, to keep, to not, you know, to be afraid of money to the Lord.
Yeah, and I think actually a great spiritual discipline is to plan excessive feasts.
Yes.
Not to say that you don't deny and you don't yeah. save and you don't, but make sure in your year, at least once, you have mm-hmm. some kind of wildly extravagant meal.
Yeah.
And yes. just go with your friends of all kinds, all, you know, ethnicities,
yeah.
the greatest diversity you can have there yeah. at the table, people that love you.
That's picture of the kingdom.
Celebrate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Celebrate God. I think that's why you're a big fan of Augustine on some level, yes. and so yeah, am yeah. I. mean, we're both, that was a big part of our friendship, was
yeah.
exploring the theology of desire in
mm-hmm.
the early church, and
yeah.
you discovered Macrina,
my love,
who I have like a little bit like besotted with theologically. Yeah. It's just a bit of an enigma to me.
Yeah.
But in her theology is a yeah. similar kind of idea of this asceticism, this denial yes. for a greater fullness. And Augustine also has this idea of usus and fructio.
Yeah.
Usus means to use something
yes
in order to experience a greater fullness. So yeah. he said, you know, we shouldn't enjoy creation as a god.
No, we should enjoy it as
we should
drawing us towards God. Yeah. Well, and Macrina, I talked about this in my emotions episode a couple while back on my podcast, but Macrina is like, we have desires because we have bodies, which on a physiological level is like pretty true. You know, we want to drink, we want to sleep, we want to eat, we want companionship, we want sex. It's all these like very bodily things. But she says that those, that God intended it to be that way, that he made us with bodies because without desire, we would not be drawn towards him.
And we wouldn't worship.
We wouldn't worship. And so she says that it's also really interesting connecting that with the resurrection because she basically says that desire is what continually draws us towards God. And Gregory of Nyssa, who's the one recording her stuff, talks about epictasis, right? Which is the continual, he says God is eternal, so we're eternally drawn into this deeper and deeper satisfaction and desire with God. But he says that her particular way of thinking about human nature is that God is impassible, according to her. And
which
so,
means that God can't suffer or experience kind of
change.
He suffers in his human nature in Christ, but not in the divine nature.
And
right?
God doesn't desire things,
yeah.
so to speak, because he doesn't lack things.
Yeah.
So our soul is in the image of God. So she says, our soul, if you were to imagine a soul separate from a body, wouldn't desire things. But because God has created us as a nature, which is to have a body, our souls are drawn toward God constantly because we have a body. And so she says the reason we have a body in the resurrection is because we couldn't be drawn into epictasis.
Can I just ask you a question? Why are women the best theologians? I happen to think that I feel like, you know, for me in journeying in understanding desire, Sarah Coakley's work, and she's an amazing Anglican theologian. It's just so interesting that the life of the body, I feel like was being brought back by women into the church and such a vital thing. And I think it's prophetic because, you know, women announced the resurrection of Jesus's body from the grave. The stamp of goodness on the human, whole of the human being, including the body.
Well, and, you know, speaking of the idea of feasting as being both an image, but also an experience that we have of God, of feeding on God, feeding on God's love. I was just talking to Marie yesterday about how if to be a human, to be fully fulfilled, is to feast on God's love, to be filled with the fullness of God. Mary is the first one who does that. She is literally filled with Christ. Christ is in her and abundant. She...
The fruit of her womb.
Yeah. Anyway. Wow, we are just like...
We're just... We've got, we're like, worshipping now.
Also, on a very, like, on a very slightly shallow level, when we were talking about fasting so that we can feast, I was just thinking, this morning I went out to breakfast with my mom, and we had, like, a kind of big breakfast, and we had eggs royale, which is, like, my very favorite thing.
Oh, the best.
It's like eggs Benedict, but instead of ham, you have smoked salmon, and Scotland has made me a smoked salmon fiend.
I have to say... Scotland is secretly amazing when it comes to food, especially when you go to the Scottish Highlands.
Oh my gosh.
So go.
Also, don't be afraid of haggis.
No, don't. It's really great.
It's really good. Haggis, neeps, and tatties.
I miss it.
I know.
With that whiskey sauce on top. Mm. Cream and whiskey.
Mm. Going back to St. Andrews this week.
Yeah.
So excited.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about it because we had this big breakfast and I intentionally like kind of did, it was like breakfast, lunch. Like we had a, we were eating at like 11. And so I kind of intentionally didn't eat anything. So that when I got there, I could just be like, indulge and delight. Yes. And it was so wonderful.
And you know, sometimes I even order a little extra something.
I know you do. I know, David.
Yeah, that's my favorite little move, you know, a little extra something.
Yes.
Make sure you have your little extra something today. Yes. But also take some time out and maybe, I think also I love to skip a meal.
Yes.
And go for a jog and, you know, I have lots of water or whatever, but it gives my body time to kind of reset, so the next day I'm ready for my my feast
and
again.
They say that's really good for your body because you know that like 70% of what your body spends its energy on is actually
so you're talking about the fact that what we're here discussing theologically is actually related to our bodily existence.
I know, believe it or not, spirituality is not separated from the world we live in.
No way.
I know. Also, I'm just going to share this. I don't think it's an embarrassing fact. It's a fact I absolutely love about you. But every time I go, like, out to lunch or breakfast or whatever with David, if it's somewhere he's been before... Are you going to be embarrassed when you tell me this? If it's somewhere he's been before, he always has, like, this very specific order that he changes slightly. Yes. But it's always great. So, like, I remember I went to the Waffle Company, which is a great little place in St. Andrews with him. And he was like, I know what you should order. And it was like... It was like French toast, but then you said, I want them to...
It's bacon.
Bacon.
Fried banana.
Fried banana.
Blueberries.
Blueberries.
And maple syrup.
Maple syrup.
With a side of scrambled eggs.
And I want you all to know that this is in no way on the menu.
And a flat white.
And a flat white.
Because I'm Australian.
Yeah. Yes, but this is like not on the menu. And I think they kind of only do it for David because I asked for 5 banana sauce when I was there and they wouldn't give it to me. I was with Eloise. And anyway, but I love that about David. And then it happened somewhere else where we went. But I was like, David is a man who, like, knows how to make the most out of his meals. And that is great.
Well, if you discover a combination of flavors, it's like listening to a concerto that just never gets old. You know?
It's so true. Which reminds me, David, that very soon, when we're both in town for a long amount of time, we need to have a cooking night.
We do.
We really need to.
We will. In honor of this podcast and you... Your lovely listeners, we will feast maybe in your honor.
Yes, and maybe I'll even take a picture and send it to you all.
Yes.
Well, I think we'll end it with that. This has been so fun. I look forward to... We were planning and scheming. We may do other podcasty things in the future.
We may. And if you want to look at my book as well, it's just very easy. awaroflovs.com. You just go on that website. There's special deals and things on there, all the information.
I'll put a link.
And we will hopefully be doing, some more exciting little podcast
about Oxford.
Things about Oxford.
Yep.
Everyone loves Oxford. Yeah. I think it's my favorite city in the world now.
I have a thing about that, but it might be me too. I mean...
Not because it's like physically the greatest city. I mean, you've got Florence, you've got Paris.
Yeah.
It's something about the... intellectual, spiritual, relational richness in this city.
Absolutely. No, it's such a special place. Mm. I just love it.
Anyway.
All right. Have lovely days. Go enjoy. What was it you said? A little special something.
A little something extra.
A little something extra. And as you eat it, think about how God wants you to experience his fullness and that food is one of the most profound ways we can do that.
And also don't forget to fast every now and then.
Yeah. To reorient your desires. Yeah. So that you can fully experience the... Yeah, okay.
Okay, enough.
Kisses. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, guys.